Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. This is David Lickin, and we're about ready to start into another very important program about everything going on in the mortgage industry. And remember, Lickin' on Lending is a public service message or a radio program that we produce each and every week for the mortgage industry. We're thrilled to have you be a part of it, and we've got an exciting program today. Exciting, I'm trying to find the right words to say on that. Exciting, or it is essential that you listen to. We got Mitch Kider, who's going to be talking to us about QRM a little bit later in the program, and it is a really important discussion. We heard Mitch speak at the Texas Mortgage Bankers Association a week or so ago, and really brought everyone just, ever since he could have heard a pin drop in there is what Joe said. We're going to get into that shortly. But again, this is June 6th. We appreciate you being with us. We hope you had a great Memorial Day break weekend and last weekend, and we did produce a program. You go in and listen to it in the archives. But it was all about the Mortgage Leader Cruise that's coming up in October. Want to learn more about it? Love to have you on the cruise. But without further ado, let's find out what's going on in the markets as we do each and every week. Joe Farr, good to have you back. We missed you, Joe.
Hi, Dave.
Doing your segment, quite frankly, it just wasn't the same. So good to have you back. What's going on in the markets today?
Well, we're down a little bit. It's down 11/32nds on the morning so far, and no real news to point to. You know, stocks are not far from where they started the day, so it's just giving back some of the big rally that we've seen over the last few weeks.
Well, if we talk about what happened last week, you've been out, but I know you've been staying in touch with it, so kind of give us what happened last week.
Well, last Wednesday, we got to the best MBS prices that we've been at this year. It fell off some on Thursday, and then Friday's jobs report, we had another nice little rally in the morning anyway. But, you know, we have reached the best prices of the year last week, and pretty much attributed to just very poor economic data. The growth information that came out of almost every economic announcement last week was weaker than expected, and as you know, the slower that the prospects of slower growth are good for mortgage rates, and so we saw a nice little rally last week.
We're getting down. You know, before the program, we were talking about where rates are at, and November kind of marked the low of a real low watermark in decades.
Yeah.
And you were saying that we're getting pretty close.
We're still about a point and a half, 2 points in price, so. So somewhere around 3/8 in rate off of those lows, but as you mentioned, those were decades long lows, and so we've seen a nice little rally, and certainly mortgage rates are conducive to volume. Not so sure that other things are conducive to volume, but it's not for lack of having low mortgage rates.
Yeah, no kidding. Kate Berry published an article this week. In fact, this morning in American Banker, talking specifically about the volume numbers. For those of you that don't have it, you should go get it, read it. Joe, so let's continue on about talking about a little bit about last week. Unemployment. We had a number of things go on last week, economic data.
Well, the jobs report's always the biggest report of the month, and boy, it was terribly disappointing. The expectations were, and these were even reduced expectations, were 150,000 jobs and only produced 54,000 jobs, and that was the lowest net job creation in a number of months. I think it was worse in September, but so, you know, 9 months ago, it was worse, but you know, we had been steadily improving, and this month was just a bad jobs month, and unemployment rate rose again. And you know, when you think about all the data that came out last week that was below consensus, Chicago PMI, consumer confidence, the ISM, jobless claims, factory order, all these things were lower than expected, and therefore the stock market fell considerably, and mortgage rates fell as well.
Well, let's see. What do we have on tap for this week as we look forward to what's going to happen? Just more of the same consistency?
This week, there's almost no economic news, Dave. There are a couple things. The Beige Book comes out, and the what is it? The import prices, but trade balance. The real market movers may be the Treasury auctions. We have the 3, the 10, and the 30-year Treasury auctions starting tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday. And those last time these particular securities were auctioned created a great deal of volatility, some favorable, some unfavorable. And so I do encourage people to pay attention. The auction results are announced at 1 o'clock Eastern time each day, and we did see some fairly significant movement following those auction results. So I encourage you to pay attention to that.
That is going to be, without question, something is if we see some changes or change in directions as it relates to the appetite for securities. I was reading an article over the weekend. It says, you know, we give away in the form of foreign assistance billions of dollars to the same countries that are also lending us back money in the form of buying up securities, things like that. It was just a real interesting article as you look at the unique dynamic. Europe and China plays a big role in it. Joe, appreciate you so much. Any parting comments, any words of wisdom you have for our listeners as they look at the interest rates moving forward?
Just encourage everyone to appreciate the low rates, and hopefully it's helping them to encourage home ownership. And we're going to talk a whole lot more about things that are going to be important factors in that result.
We've got the QRM discussion with Mitch Keiter coming up. Joe, thank you so much. Appreciate you being with us each and every week. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. It's June 6th, and we're about ready to get the legislative update. Al Salvi and her team there, Mortgage U, do an outstanding job of digesting all that's going on, and certainly there is a lot going on across the planet right now. It seems like everything. I keep thinking of that song, Edwin Starr's song, War, What Is It Good For?
Oh, right.
And I'm thinking if we're going to change the words up for the industry. I'm going to be you speaking next week, Alice, or Monday, a week from today, in Sedona at the Arizona Mortgage Lenders Association. I'm speaking at the luncheon there, and I think I might play that song and change the words up. War, what is it good for, to regulation, what is it good for? So,
really?
Alice, what's coming down the line?
Hey, yeah, but I was 2 or something when that song came out. Of course, no, I'm fibbing. Yeah, I remember that one.
That
I remember that song.
Songs.
It was
a lot
a good
of people
tune.
Go, huh? So what's the traffic report look like today?
Oh, my gosh. You know, just when we think we've got enough to focus on, we've got Congress circling back again looking at this FHA, the FHA down payment requirements. So There was a hearing that was held, and now at least it has a title, the FHA Rural Regulatory Act of 2011. As of checking yesterday, there wasn't a bill out yet, an actual bill number to watch on this. But the bill reportedly would include not only changing the down payment requirements, but also would prohibit financing any closing costs. And, you know, without actual bill wording, I can't tell you what the implications of that would be. You know, okay, what about refinances? Are they just talking about purchases where, you know, you couldn't roll in costs, which we're not doing anyway other than in some of the products. But, you know, it really is both testifying. We've got people saying, wait a minute, FHA should not be in this space. We're trying to reduce FHA's risks. And then you have the other side saying, but they've gotten their risks under control. They've changed their underwriting requirements. They've increased the mortgage insurance premium. So is there really trouble for the fund? Let's get some time under our belts to see what the statistics are in these new FHA changes. So a lot of arguments back and forth on both sides, and we'll have to wait and see on this one. But I'll certainly keep you posted each week once we get a bill number, and so we can talk about exactly what the wording says, exactly what the implications might be. Of course, the big things are the QRM and QM. So thank goodness we've got Mitch on the program later on to be able to summarize those for us, and we've got tons of questions that we've sent to him so that he can hopefully shed some light on some of the uncertainty in the news that's out there. What I'm going to cover right now is just letting you know that the credit risk retention piece, which is your 5% risk retention that goes with QRM, that comment period actually expires this week, June 10th. You know, if you're at a loss for how to comment, the Mortgage Bankers Association has some good comments that you can just copy and send, although I'm a big fan of do both, resend MBA's comments and type in your own, and you can use your search feature to say, you know, Federal Register credit risk management or credit risk retention and respond to proposed rule. Write a whole sentence, and I'll bet you get it up there as one of your first hits. I've done that before, and it works. So you have till June 10th to respond on the credit risk retention piece. Yeah, it's right around the corner. But then the QM is July 21st. MBA has asked, you know, can we get an extension? If we're trying to have these two definitions be similar, why would they have different comment periods? Then, of course, we have that July 21st is also the date the CFPB is supposed to go in place. So, you know, it's a little uncertainty then on QM. Okay, comment period expires, then what? And Mitch will be talking about that later in the program. We are watching a bill. There's a House bill, 1121, and a Senate bill, 737, that are proposing to replace the CFPB as with one head to with a commission of five people. I've been doing a little reading on this. It seems like, you know, it's not as bad if we have one person. There certainly is regulatory oversight. So there was an article that, you know, some people have talked about, you know, the idea of, you know, it's not really uncontrolled oversight. There is some partisan wrangling going on there in terms of defining how much power the CFPB has. So I encourage you to read about it yourself to kind of understand the pros and cons of whether a five-person commission would really change anything. Then maybe Mitch can talk to that point as well. Secondly, I guess I want to, another thing about this is the CFPB has rolled out the combined good faith estimate and truth in lending disclosures. They have their page, Know Before You Owe, at consumerfinance.gov. Go take a look at a sample of these forms because they're also looking for comments about, you know, these forms, and you want to kind of get your two cents in on how you like the GFE and the TIL. Now, the actual comment period for that expired May 31st, but take a look at the forms, and there are some advantages. There are some good things about the combined GFE and TIL disclosure. It actually looks better than our current GFE, but make sure you get a chance to study up on that. Couple implementation dates. July 21st, you have a new ECOA disclosure. The adverse action notice has to include credit score information, and then also your risk-based pricing disclosure on July 31st. It's going to have to start making sure it shows the actual score issued as a part of the loan decision. So a couple of minor rules that floated out there and passed while we weren't looking and paying attention to other stuff. And last but not least, House Bill 1859, Gary Peters and John Campbell, their solution for Fannie and Freddie. we'll have lots to talk about. You know, that's certainly a little further out than trying to address QRM and QM right now. So that's my update for today, Dave.
Well, thank you so much, Alice. There is no question that we're finding that the landscape has keeps getting more and more crowded with activity that's coming off the hill. And, folks, you're going to want to stay tuned and listen to our guest, Mitch Kiter, who's going to be talking about QRM, all the things that Alice has been talking about each and every week. We're going to dive deep into QRM, and we'll be back with that discussion. Well, first, the doctor, the prophet doctor is next, then the QRM discussion. You don't want to miss the prophet doctor. He's going to be talking about sharks that are in the water. I wonder what he's got up his sleeve with that one. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. Now, I'm going to try to hum a few bars from that song. If you remember the movie, the theme song or the theme music to Jaws, da-da-da-da-da-da. I'd like to have a soundboard and plug that back in here, but Andy Schell is going to tell us why we need to be concerned again about the sharks in the water. Andy Schell, Prophet Doctor, good to have you with us.
Well, thanks, Dave. That was great. That was great. I really appreciate the sound effect. Yeah. That's good. Now, I do think there's sharks in the water, and the scary part is there's a lot of people out there swimming. And,
yeah.
You know, what image does that bring up? The movie Jaws. You know, great movie, ominous sounds, the fin pops up out of the water, the big shark. And if we see the fin, what do? We react, we run, we swim, we try to get out of the water. And what happens if we don't see the fin, and we can't swim fast enough? Well, you know, we get eaten.
Yep.
So the problem today is, you know, I see a fin in the mortgage banking waters, and it's coming toward us quickly. And the scary part is, I don't think many people see it. And here's how this is connecting back. Last month, on May the 15th, the first NMLS call report was due, and for most, it was submitted just fine. Now, the problem is that for many companies, that was only the first of the reports. So there's another one. There's a big one, a more complicated one, that is still out there, and it's likely going to be more painful than the first. And this is a shark fin that just popped up in the mortgage waters. That second report has a lot of issues that's going to surface. So just to recap a little bit about the report, we all remember the NMLS call report. The
yep.
call report, basically, think about it like this. The call report has four sections. There's two sections that are for big companies and two sections that are for everybody else. So the big companies are the Fannie Freddie, Genie approved seller servicer issuers. So the big companies have already filed their two sections, which was the activity report called the RMLA and the financial condition or the FC report. They've already filed it. They have to file it every quarter and will continue to do so, you know, forever. Everybody else, we had to file our first report. We should have filed the activity report, the RMLA, and we'll continue to do that every quarter from now on. But here's the problem. There are a large group of lenders who have not yet filed the second part of that report, the financial condition report. And it's not due until later, and it's going to cover all of the activity, all the financial activity for this year. And that new NMLS financial condition report is for everything that happened. And this report's going to require lenders to capture and report a lot of information about the income that was collected, the expenses that were incurred on every single loan that closed. And so specifically, what this really means is that for a lot of lenders, they're going to have to report all interim interest collected at closing that the customer paid as part of the closing transaction, and that information is on the HUD-1 along with all the other origination fees and a bunch of other details. Now, the scary part is most lenders do not capture this information in their accounting system. Now, the other problem is that there's another element of detail that has to be captured because of the NMLS call report, and that's where lenders have to report payroll in a much more detailed manner than they have before. Today, most lenders will report payroll and put it in the general ledger and maybe have one or two groups. The new report's going to require that we break payroll into a bunch of different categories. We've got to report sales payroll expenses by salary by salespeople, by fulfillment non-salespeople, by secondary marketing, post-closing, origination management, other origination-related, and on. We've never had to do this before, Dave. This is new. And most accounting systems are not built to record payroll in this much detail. Very few companies have their accounting system set up to capture this level of payroll detail. So what ends up happening is that when we get to the end of the year, if interim interest hasn't been pulled and all the other details that comes from loan level accounting wasn't pulled, and if all the payrolls weren't fixed to do what the report requires, at the end of the year, everybody's going to have to go back through and redo the entire year to fix it all. So the shark in the water for many companies is that they will have to reconstruct their books for this entire year and analyze every single loan they made for the whole year and redo every payroll they processed for the whole year. And that's going to take a lot of time, and it's going to cost a lot of money. You know, that report has to be filed, and an incorrect data is considered not filed correctly. So that's a problem. And if you knowingly file a false report to federal state agency, that's fraud. So you can't do that either. So you've got to do it right. You can't just make it up. And to make things worse, they'll be watching. There was an article I read from one of the CPA journals about the IRS. They've hired a bunch of new revenue agents to go out and watch employee classifications. And the state licensing agencies, the State Department of Labor, the Federal Department of Labor, the IRS, have all identified information from the NMLS system as item of interest. So they're going to be watching. Lots of people are going to be watching the data that's being reported. So we've got to do it right. We've got to do it right the first time. So, you know, my biggest concern is if you can't get the data fixed in time to make the deadline, and you know you can't make it up, and you know you just can't submit anything, and if you can't get it fixed in time because you got to redo the whole year, well, then your audit and your NMLS financial condition call report is going to be late. And what happens if it's very late? Well, we're not sure what the state's going to do, but HUD's eventually going to suspend your license, and we've heard from in Texas, they're likewise going to suspend licensing if they don't get reports filed. So, you know, ignoring this issue results in bad and worse consequences. It's like the shark in the water is big and bigger.
And getting bigger.
Yeah, there's really no solution to this except just fix it. So act now and modify the accounting system and the procedures to support the new report to make sure it's correct. Now, Dave, as you know, we're launching a webinar through Campus MBA that's going to be coming out very soon so people can get the info they need to get this right. It's going to require that they retool their accounting systems. So to fix the problem, companies have to restructure their accounting system and their accounting procedures and retool the financial data capture structure to implement what we call loan-level accounting, where we're going to capture all the data of every loan that's closed, every loan that's sold, put all that information in the accounting system so we can then report it. So this gets complicated, and that's why we're holding the webinar. Now, one quick caution about financial systems. A lot of companies have an accounting system where they can go to their bookkeeper and say, give me that report, and they'll push a button, out comes a report. Just because the financial report looks good doesn't mean it's right. Don't underestimate the complexity of getting the detailed capture for this financial condition report, the FC report of the NMLS. It's complicated. It's detailed. It's going to be a brand new world. It's a brave new world for a lot of mortgage bankers to implement this. The activity report was easy compared to what we're going to have to do to get this right, but we can do it, and we can get it right. We can get the information pulled together, and once we've done all this restructuring and made our accounting work, it's really a silver lining. It's really going to be good because—
I was going to say, please tell us there's a silver lining in all this, and I know you know there is.
Well, the reality is we should have been doing it this way all along. If people have been listening to the Profit Doctor for very long, we've been all along saying, do loan-level accounting. You got to do loan-level accounting because that's the only way you're going to get profit per loan, profit per branch, profit by originator. So the silver lining is the SC report is forcing us to implement the changes we should have implemented anyway to do loan level accounting, so we can then have the information we need to effectively run our business. So it really is, it's good, and it's essential. Actually, I think it's a requirement for survival to know your profit per loan and the KPIs that come from loan level accounting. So we can all avoid the shark in the water. Just get out,
yep,
fix your accounting systems now, and you'll have great information, more information than you've ever had before, and you'll comply with the report.
So important. And if you're thinking about, I mean, our listeners, of course, because they listen to you, are well-armed, well-prepared, and know about it. But there are some out there, to my amazement, who are saying, you know what, this is just getting too complicated, I'm going to blow it off. You cannot. Mm-hmm. There is a shark in the water. If you're swimming out there with a life preserver, and there's no, that's one thing. Swimming out there in the water without putting a shark tank around you. And what Andy's talking about is get good systems. Get those metal bars down. They won't eat you. They can't eat
exactly.
You and you still enjoy the waters. Andy, thank you so much for bringing it to us each and every week. The Profit Doctor segment is very, very valuable. And you'll definitely want to learn more. They can go to the Campus MBA website, or they can go to the Lickin' on Lending webpage to learn more about that webinar. If you want to learn more about it, it's valuable information. I encourage you to be a part of that webinar. Get registered early because the seats do fill up. Is there a limitation? I don't know that there is. But anyway, come on board. We'd love to have them. The more the merrier. Thank you so much, Andy. Profit Doctor, good to have you be with us. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned. We got Mitch Kiter coming up right after the break, and we're going to be talking about QRM. We're going to be talking about, again, we're going to go over and do a quick definition about QRM. We're going to talk about what does this mean? What is this? What does this mean? My gosh, it's the ramifications of QRM is so significant. You're not going to want to miss our next segment. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back. This is David Lickin, your host of Lickin on Lending, and we're so thrilled to have Mitch Kiter again with us. He's no stranger to our regular listening audience. And Mitch is the founding member of Wiener, Brodsky, Seidman, and Kiter. Boy, I just love attorney names. To put those all together and say those, I always have a little compassion for the receptions up there. Mitch has been a litigator by trade. He comes to us with an extensive amount of background and insights into the mortgage industry. He is, I mean, you can go on to Wiener, Brodsky, Seidman, and Kiter, their website. I encourage you to do it. It's www.wbsk.com. You can read Mitch's bio. I don't want to spend too much time on it because he's got such important information for us about QRM. When I was at the conference at the Texas Mortgage Bankers Annual Conference here in Austin a week or so ago, this is almost 2 weeks ago now, Joe Farr came running up to me and says, "We've got to get Mitch back on the program. You should have heard him speak, the speech he gave here at the conference. It just, everybody was talking about it." So, Mitch, good to have you be with us again. We welcome you to the program. Want to make sure that we have Mitch's mic turned on, that we have him all ready to go there. And I apologize there, Mitch. We just realized we didn't have you quite turned on. There we go. Mitch, are you with us?
I'm with you. Thanks, David. Good
okay,
to be back.
Good, sir. It's good to be back here. My apologies. I was hunting for the mic. I turned on the wrong one. So anyway, good to have you back and with us. Joe Farr, good to have your input on this. I'm going to ask you to, Mitch, give us a good overview for those listeners that have not been staying up on the ramifications of QRM. Give us a definition of QRM, and if you could give us an overview of why this is so significant, Mitch.
Absolutely. Well, let's start here. Risk retention in qualified residential mortgages is probably one of two of the most important regulations that will ever come out of the Dodd-Frank Act. The risk retention rule itself involves loan securitization and will require a 5% retention, risk retention, for most mortgages that are put into mortgage-backed securities. That obviously is going to have quite an impact on the availability, the affordability, and the delivery of mortgage credit itself. It comes out of Title IX of the Dodd-Frank Act, which requires that securitizers, sponsors, even originators retain an economic interest in the credit risk in the loan securities themselves. And there are certain exceptions. Government loans that are guaranteed or insured by the government are accepted from that. So to the extent that FHA and VA loans are placed into Ginnie Mae securities, there's no risk retention requirement that goes along with that. How about Fannie and Freddie and GSE loans? Well, those loans will only be exempted from risk retention so long as the GSEs, Fannie and Freddie, so long as they remain under government conservatorship. And everyone knows that that's not going to go on forever. And that brings us to what a QRM is. There's a safe harbor, and it's known as a qualified residential mortgage. But it's a very, very difficult safe harbor to meet because a residential mortgage, a QRM, among other things, will require no less than a 20% borrower down payment, and generally even more than a 20% borrower down payment because the borrower will have to bring their own closing costs to the table as well. That's going to create a number of different issues. There's going to be front-end and back-end debt-to-income ratios that are written in stone, 28% and 36% respectively. If you want to refinance your loan, not even a cash-out refinance, you're going to have a 75% LTV. If it's a cash-out refinance, a 70% LTV. So there are many, many stringent requirements that govern these QRMs, and the question is, are QRMs going to become the norm or the exception to the rule?
Well, Joe Farr, we're going to have you jump into this discussion. Thank you so much, Mitch, for giving our listening audience an overview on what QRM. Most are familiar with it, but it's like we hear this discussion, we read more and more information, and it really brings you some of the questions Joe wants to get into. Joe?
Well, and Mitch, you really woke up the crowd at the TMBA convention, throughout the event, everyone kept referring to what Mitch said. So one of the things that struck us all was the dire nature, if you will, of the rule. And, you know, so if you would, could you explain sort of without changes, how do you see the business operating in post-QRM and let's say post-Fannie and Freddie? Because it really sounded like you felt like it'd be a game-changing event.
Well, that's right, Joe. That's a really good point. I think it is a game-changing event. I think that without any changes to the definition of a QRM, we're going back about 30, maybe 35 years. I think you're going to the point where the norm is going to be that a borrower has to come to the closing table with at least a 20% down payment. And we all know that that's not really possible, at least not at the lending levels that we're looking at even today, which have dropped down significantly from where they were in the past. So if that, in fact, becomes the norm, it's going to render mortgage loans and buying houses unaffordable for most Americans, in all honesty. It's going to impact affordable housing. What is going to happen if an originator or a securitizer effectively has to take a 5% risk retention on anything they place into a security? What's going to happen is the cost is going to be passed on to the consumer. The cost of mortgage finance is, in fact, going to go up. And I think the administration themselves have admitted that in the past. They say, listen, you know, we're not going to sugarcoat it for you. It's going to become much more expensive for someone to buy a home. That's going to happen, and that is a dramatic game changer. And that's going to leave protected minority groups, socioeconomic groups, out of the picture in terms of obtaining the American dream of home ownership.
You'll remember I asked you a question there at the conference. How does a company that has fair lending requirement, well, we all have fair lending requirements and CRA requirements, how will they balance their requirements under those rules and regulations with without making a non-QRM loan?
It's in fact very, very difficult to do. Very difficult to do. And in fact, many people are now asking both Congress and regulators, how do they balance fair lending with their own definition of QRM? It makes no sense because right now the Obama administration is pursuing fair lending cases under a disparate impact standard, meaning, okay, we understand the business reason for the policy that you have, but it is disproportionately impacting protected minority groups. What do you think a QRM will do? Absolutely,
yeah.
Statistically, yeah. It can be shown that will disproportionately impact it, and it will take, it will make it unaffordable for many Americans to buy a home.
Mitch, have you heard people quantify what they think a QRM loan rate would be versus a non-QRM loan rate?
You know,
I've heard anywhere from 10 basis points to 3%.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Joe. That's exactly what I've heard as well. I've spoken to many people about it. It's going from, 20 basis points to 300 basis points. My guess is it's going to be the higher amount, but that's right.
Yeah, mine too.
One of the things I want to jump in on with some questions is you talked about the 20% down payment. There's been a whole lot of talk. Does PMI insurance, a mortgage insurance, cover how does that factor in, going to more of a general sense?
Doesn't factor in at all. Under the proposed rule itself, you cannot make up for it with private mortgage insurance.
So you're saying private mortgage insurance does not, count as the down payment. So if it's insured, the top percentage of the loan is not insured, it does not factor into it being a QR.
Would not make a difference at all. But the important thing to note over here is we're only 4 days away from the comment period, and I know that the MBA, the ABA, and other agencies have been asking for quite some time for an extension. Who knows whether or not it's going to come? I mean, we're really coming down to the wire over here. The important thing to note is the proposed rule itself contains over 175 multi-part questions specifically requesting comments on things of this sort as well, even things as to what role should MI play in this. It's really important, even at this late date, that anyone that's listening to this and everyone in the industry get up, take a look at this, at least take a look at the summary of this proposed rule, if nothing else, and comment. Alice was absolutely right. You can get something from the MBA, but it's important to put your own comments in there as well.
Yeah, I think it's such a good point. Any sense for how many comments are coming into them?
I haven't taken a look recently, so I don't know how many comments are coming into them. But I got to tell you, in all honesty, Joe, when I went to Texas and I spoke to everyone about this, the looks on their faces told me that they, were somewhat unaware and that comments were not being made at that time. And that wasn't too long ago.
No. Mitch, how do you handicap the likelihood of change? I've never seen the number of organizations that are usually on the opposite side of the table be on the same side of the table unified against this.
I think that's right, Joe, and I think there will be some changes to this proposed rule. I think there have to be, and I think that the regulators acknowledge that themselves when they ask their 175 questions. That's not typical in notice and comment rulemaking for regulators to outline it for you along those lines and ask for specific comments and proposals. So I think that there will in fact be some changes. There are some things that are fairly easy for to make changes. The risk retention provisions themselves have no term limitation. You would theoretically hold that 5% risk for the life of the loan itself. Now, that can certainly change, and they can do something along those lines. The consumer advocate groups that have come together with the mortgage bankers themselves have come together over the loan-to-value ratios, recognizing that it's no longer a mission to have affordable housing if you're going to require a minimum 20% down payment. So maybe the LTV provisions will change a little bit. Maybe not. Regulators to this day, from my conversations, seem to feel fairly strongly about that, but we'll see. We have our ability to repay provisions and our qualified mortgage, and those are pretty strict standards that are over there, and maybe the regulators will come together and recognize that the definition ought to be one and the same. I mean, one of the questions that you have is if you're going to have a federal ability to repay standard itself, why do you need risk retention? Why is that even necessary over there if you're following the standard on ability to repay to ensure that this borrower was not just qualified from the investor underwriting provisions, but from the government's own standards?
Mitch, the MBA has focused much of its effort on changing or eliminating the LTV entirely and the DTI portion under the logic that it, you know, it doesn't make sense to say that just because somebody had a 29 front ratio, even though they had 50% down, it's not a QRM. But it also, if you don't have specifics like that, you are forced into a fairly vague definition. Is one better than the other?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to, quite frankly. When you're dealing with a QRM as opposed to a qualified mortgage for an ability to repay, when you're dealing with a QRM, what Congress was looking for is a bright line standard. It either meets the test and there's no risk retention requirement, or it doesn't. It really wasn't so much about underwriting itself. It was more about other features of the loan itself that make it much less risky, much less likely to default itself. So a bright line standard is probably somewhat important for something that's called a QRM, as opposed to a QM, an ability to repay, is really an underwriting determination, and underwriters ought to have discretion. So they ought to be able to look at compensable factors and things along those particular lines.
Well, what I want to do is I want to take a quick break here, Mitch. We have as our special guest Mitch Keiter with Weiner, Brodsky, Seidman, and Keiter. And he's one of the founding members of the firm. We've got lots of great information about this. Folks, this is a sobering discussion, but you've got to know this. But most importantly, you've got to be prepared to respond. No response implies everyone's fine with it. We've got to plug into it. We're going to talk more about that after we get back after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI. In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got Mitch Kiter with Weiner, Brodsky, Seidman, and Kiter in Washington, D.C., the only place where property values continue to go up because the government's hiring and property values are going up there. If you guys didn't catch the report that came out last week, I was on Fox and did another Fox segment. I was on, interviewed by Neil Cavuto. We were talking about property values with the double dip that was widely reported last week as a result of the latest indication of where property values are going. And then if we think that's bad, wait till if we see what the impact could be of QRM. It's really significant. Again, Mitch, it's good to have you with us on the radio program. I want to talk a little bit about some of the things. I mean, if there's a, we have just about 5 minutes or so in this segment that we want to go through. It's important that people make a difference, and they think so many people. Alice wrote a note to me saying, you know, there's so many people out there. Her clients are so cynical. They go, we tried to do something, Dodd-Frank, nothing happened. Why try? This is just a railroad. I mean, this is a train coming down the track. There's nothing we can do to stop it. What's your commentary to those that might be having that those thoughts?
Well, the first thing that I would say is if you do nothing, you're certainly not going to stop it at all. That's number one. Number two, you know, we have the Administrative Procedures Act, and that's what governs these types of transactions. There's checks and balances on what regulatory agencies do, because the regulators that are putting this rule through are not people that were elected to office itself. They have to go through notice and comment rulemaking. They have to give you an opportunity to have your say. Tell them what your comments are, and they need to read it and respond to it. And if they don't do those things, then you get guys like me that step up and challenge it. I'm no stranger to challenging government regulations and having them set aside because they failed to go through the proper procedures. But you can't do anything like that if you're just going to sit back and let these things happen.
Without question. You got to act. Got to do something. And I think one of the ways I'd like to get for those that need to or that have a desire and say, okay, I'm going to do something. I'm not sure it's going to do any good, but at least they're ready to do something. What is the best way for them to respond to that, Mitch?
Well, they absolutely need to comment, and it doesn't matter if your comment is a half a page or 25 pages. Number one, at this late stage, you should go to the Mortgage Bankers Association, both your state associations and the national associations. They all have materials on it. They all have a couple of pages of talking points. You can take provisions out along those particular lines. Sit down, put a comment together. Think about how it's going to impact your particular company as well. Think about what you believe is going to happen to lending, as well as home prices, quite frankly. Because if people can't borrow money, home prices are going down further and further. It's not getting any better. Quite frankly, it's only going to get worse if that's the case. Put those comments in. You have until June 10th right now to get comments in on that. And then think about those qualified mortgages, because you have more time on that, and the date on that is July 22nd. The ability to repay standard is a very, very important standard as well. So think about that.
Joe, you had a
Mitch,
couple other questions.
There's been a letter written by a number of, I don't know, totally senators or let's just call them legislators, to the regulators that came out with this definition of QRM, in essence opposing or saying that they missed their intent. Yeah. If QRM does not change, what are the chances that something's going to come from the legislative side to say you are going to change?
Well, it's a possibility. It's actually a possibility under this. You know, if QRM does not change, and if what people like myself are saying about the significant impact it's going to have on the availability and affordability of credit, then I think that you have a chance of the legislature, of both Congress and the Senate, stepping up along those lines. You know, many authors of Dodd-Frank thought that QRM would be the exception to the rule, be a very narrow group of loans that would have no risk retention requirement associated with it, and everything else would. But the reality is, if you can get away without any risk retention, those are the loans you're going to be looking to make. That's where the marketplace is going to go. And I think they recognize that if that happens, then they have problems there. They have fair lending problems. They have problems with various socioeconomic groups themselves. They're going to have problems maintaining a healthy housing economy. It's not healthy now. It'll only get worse. It's certainly not going to turn it around. So I think there is another shot up on the hill if, in fact, things get worse, which they will, quite frankly, if QRNs don't change.
Mm-hmm. Well, along those same lines, Mitch, a lot of talk about, you know, what happens to the whole MBS market, and is it alive and well enough to have a TBA market or to be an ounce market, which is what allows people to lock a loan rate in. I mean, without a good market, no one's going to be able to, customers won't be able to lock in a loan rate.
That's that's exactly right. And, you know, it's a very good question. What happens to that particular market if, in fact, you know, the sponsor of these MBSs has to take a 5% risk retention? Some will willingly do it. But what does that do to the rates? They're not taking it out of their own pocket. It's being turned on to the consumer themselves. I'm not sure that I can visualize a viable market from all of that.
Right.
Keeps bringing up that song by Edwin Starr, War or Regulation, in this case. What is it good for? The one, very ones we're trying to protect, Mitch, seem to be the ones that the consumers are the ones that are taking it in the proverbial shorts on this one, is because it's just going to change up home ownership. And then you look at Dodd-Frank. I think, Joe, you had a great comment about Barney Frank and, you know, Senator Dodd about, you know, how much it'd be interesting to know how much rental property they own. It's one of those comments where you start wondering, what is behind this? Mitch, it's so good to have you be with us. Give us a quick update on your firm. Tell us why people should get a hold of you. You certainly are one of the prominent law firms in there in the Beltway, and certainly one of the, I think, one of the people that we should be listening to on this. Give us a little more information. Give us one
minute background
about what you do, why people should be contacting you and getting a relationship with you and your firm.
Absolutely. Our firm has been representing this industry, the mortgage finance industry, for more than 30 years now. I've been doing this for 30 years myself. We're here in Washington. We have an office in Texas and California as well. And we're full service to the industry. We represent the largest of the players and the smallest of the players in there as well, on all fronts, regulatory, transactional, litigation, across the board. And the reality is, when we talk to our clients, when they come to us, when they find us, they say, wow, you guys know our business better than we do. And that's what we set out to do.
Well, and I will attest
again
to that, David. Mitch is as good as it comes. Mitch has done work for the companies I've been associated with for a long time, and no one goes into it better prepared for knowing your business than Mitch and his team.
Well, folks, we've had Mitch Kider as our guest. Mitch, it's so good to have you be here. And as Ask Developments happen, please give us a call. We want to have you on. We'll make room for you, Mitch, anytime you see some things that need to get out to our audience. We have a large listening audience. We're pretty pleased that you would take some time out of your very busy day to join us. Have a great week there inside the Beltway, Mitch. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right. Thank you, guys.
You bet. All right, we're going to go off and talk a little bit about kind of what's happening in the market, where we're going. By the way, I'm going to be speaking at the Arizona Mortgage Lenders Association in Sedona. If you're going to be in the area or out there, would like to come out, would love to talk to you. I'm going to be talking about the future of mortgage banking. It's going down the lines. And what Andy and I, the Profit Doctor and I, wrote for the MBA magazine. And we're going to be talking about that, giving an update on that, as well as just generally where the industry is going to be going. We're going to be talking more about QRM there as well. But we appreciate Mitch being on here giving us an update. Let's bring Tony Garitano in and get us an update of all that's going on in the area of technology and his view of the world with progress in lending. Sometimes, Tony, it feels like we're going backwards. Are we making progress, Tony?
Hopefully, if we implement technology, we can.
Yeah, I think there's every time, like Andy talks about, you know, the importance of accounting systems and having all the things that are there. What do you see out there, and what's some words of wisdom you have for our listening audience?
Well, I was struck by the QRM discussion, because at the Global Technology Summit, they had a congressman there give a speech, and he was actually responsible for writing portions of Dodd-Frank. And he didn't think that there would be any speculation as to what a QRM was. He thought the mortgage industry would just automatically understand it. And that just shows, you know, what little these congressmen and women and senators and such really knew about the mortgage industry as they were trying to reform it. And I thought, you know, if that's the case, you know, we're going to have to figure out this thing on our own. And there's going to be a lot more desperation, a lot more fraud going on as a result, especially on the part of borrowers who are going to try anything and everything to get qualified for a loan, given that these qualifications are becoming increasingly stringent.
Yeah.
Which I thought was... So that's where technology can help us, Dave. I think Interthink said that income and identity fraud went up by 30% last year.
Wow.
And what happens is we have tools at our disposal, like the 4506T, like Social Security checks, that we can run, but what technology is doing is automating that process in so much as they're interacting with the IRS, they're interacting with the Social Security Administration, and they're bundling those products now.
How really interesting.
What I wanted to talk to you about today was kind of how different vendors are acting as intermediaries. It's still actually paper intensive for the vendor, but the vendor is passing that information back to the lender as data, and they're partnering with other vendors. For example, a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, use FraudGuard. It's almost an industry standard at this point. Interthink is doing a lot of integrations with companies like Equifax and Tox and others who can feed them verification of income and verbal verification of income and Social Security checks. And so I think that if I could leave you with one bit of wisdom, it's that you should be running these checks. That goes without saying. But you should also be asking your vendors if they can do these things on your behalf, if they can return them to you as XML data, and if they can offer you all of these services through one integration or one solution.
That would be a dream if we could do it through one solution on an integrated basis. What's the probability of that happening, Tony, in the short time?
And I think you're going to see more integrations moving in that direction. And I think that if QRM truly does happen in the form that it is being talked about, lenders are going to demand it. And vendors will have to respond.
Vendors will have to respond. No question the vendor being in tune to what's going on with your vendor is so important. There's just so many things for us to be monitoring. Tony, so good to have you be with us. For those of you who want to read the articles and stay up on top of what Tony is doing, go to progressinlending.com. And there's some great information there, some great articles, and certainly a focus on technology, but really a focus on the whole industry. Tony, thanks so much for being with us each and every week. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
You betcha. Let's go back to the Profit Doctor and Joe Farr. And Alice had to drop from the program a little bit earlier today. But I want to bring the both of them in as we go out to wrap up the program. Joe, let's start with you. Some comments on Mitch's presentation. He really captured the attention at the TMBA. I think everyone should be captured by this. What's your kind of your closing thoughts, your summary thoughts on his presentation topic?
Well, I just concur with what he said about letting your voice be heard. It's very easy to issue a comment letter. It's quite frankly, if you're going to use the letter that Mortgage Action Alliance has put out, it's just a couple of clicks. You got to put in your personal address so they'll know which congresspeople to send it to. But it's very easy, and it does matter. I mean, they're gonna tally up all the comments. There's some law that says they have to look at each one, and make them look at it. Let them know your thoughts, and let them know where you stand.
Time to be making your voice heard. Profit Doctor, you got a quick comment there before we go to the door here? We're almost out of time.
Yeah, well, Dave, I guess that are we Pompeii and Mount Vesuvius is about to explode? I don't think so. I really don't. I don't think that the end is near. I think that focusing on the production we can do, focus on FHA, and just keep your nose to the ground and keep pushing forward, keep developing your systems, your process, your sales, and this too will pass.
This too will pass. Folks, it's so good to have you join us again this week. Be with us. We'll be back next week. I'll be broadcasting from Sedona. Be good to have you with us. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Tell your friends to listen as well. Have a great week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr, from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Elvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.